Welcome to the 2021 AFL Premiership season on AFL Nation.
Pulls it into the pocket. Cameron wants it. Cameron gets it.
To Silwood, standing start. Lash the ball toward the goal. Oh, that's a moment of inspiration from the skipper.
Charlie comes up brandishing. He doubles back from left to right and kicks one of the goals of the season.
50 from goal. Kept it alive. 48 from goal. Goes with the banana. It'll be the miracle. Oh, kick off the boat! You're kidding me!
You've just done the impossible!
Martin tracks him. Martin's got it. He scored. He shoots. It's the stuff of legend!
Don't tell me! Welcome to AFL Nation.
Yes, a very good evening, everyone, and welcome to AFL Nation on this Friday night football. And, of course, all attention is on the Adelaide Oval for a rematch from last year's preliminary final between Port Adelaide and Richmond. Our pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best. Choose Beaumont Tiles for 28% off floor tiles and for hard yakka. Well, we do have a injury tonight with Jared Healy out of the team, but we have a very, very able replacement, and that is a man who knows, well, both these sides, but particularly one of them very well. He was in the inner sanctum last year. He's been a great addition to the AFL Nation team this year. I welcome Justin Leppich aboard. Welcome, Justin.
Evening, Hutto. I'm very excited for my first Friday night. Big game, big crowd.
Big game. Prime time, and so we've given you a very able assistant, the man who's with us every Friday night, and that is Jordan Lewis. Louis, good evening to you.
Has it been a medical sub? There's usually four of us in here.
Well, so that, well, what's happened is we had one medical sub, so Jared was out.
Yeah, so we've used that.
Leppich's come in.
We've got no other sub to use.
But then we've seemed to have another vacant chair, so at the moment we're just sort of taking offers as to whether Dwayne might get here at some stage.
He'll be on his way. Hey, ripping game. Last year, as you said, last year's prelim finalist, and walking into here and seeing Leppich here, just fascinated to see how they play and how we talk about the game and what Richmond can fix, I suppose, over what happened last week, and do Port Adelaide take on board what Sydney did? You know, if Sydney are playing the best football of the year, probably of any side, and do Port Adelaide look at that and go, you know, there's a little bit in that? Or was it just a Richmond one-off that we just go, well, push it to the side and let's hope they come back better?
Well, both sides coming off big defeats last week, and unexpected certainly in the size of both defeats, unexpected full stop with Richmond. Does it lead us, though, to the obvious conclusion, Louis? No Leppich, no Richmond.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit later when we interview a certain someone. So it's
look, I'm not sure about that one. They'll be okay. They've got a shocking round three record. The Tigers actually goes back 3 years now. I think it's a 45-point average. So I don't think they're going to get too concerned internally in the Wolves.
They obviously spent a bit of time though in the box, didn't they? Damien explained that to a degree post match. So what would the process be of going through last week's results be in the inner sanctum through the week? And is it more accentuated by the fact that there's new rules at play and so forth, so that, you know, they might not just, it's not just, oh, well, you know, we need to do this better or that better, but, hey, this game's actually a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to ask Adam Kingsley that question later on when he gets on, because there's one difference since I've been out of the game is the stand rule, and that has definitely changed the transition numbers. They've gone through the roof, and not just Richmond, but every team struggling with it, and the good offensive teams are cashing in on that particular rule. But Hutto, you'll hear the term a lot, we're going to school at the moment. Yeah. You heard Damien Hardwick say it. You saw Essendon last night go to school on Sydney and stop those uncontested marks. Port Adelaide will go to school on the prelim, but then again, they'll go to school on the last time they played Richmond, that game where they smashed them at Adelaide Oval as well. So there's a lot of information coaches will go to school on and try and fix their game plan.
Well,
it's good timing. Yeah. So when Richmond have a poor performance like that and you want to get back on the horse, what's the one thing they go back to? Is it pressure? Or is it their stoppage work? Or is it they tighten up defensively? What's probably the one thing they go, okay, this is where we need to, because when it's a game like that, there's probably a lot of things that go wrong. What's the one thing you think they would have spoken about this week?
I think defence. Yeah, no doubt. I thought they gave up that short ball way too much. It's a bit un-Richmond-like in the way they do it. Look, and that's what I'm intrigued with. Is that the man on the mark that's stopping it? I thought last night Essendon proved that it's not solely the man on mark. He could still actually take out a lot of those short, uncontested marks if you are on the ball. And I think Richmond will go to school on that one because they want you kicking the ball long down the line, ultimately. And Sydney just didn't do that.
You talk about going to school and how the rules now have changed the game and how it then evolves. Like, how forensically do you think teams are looking at every match if they think that there's, you know, something they can get out of it? Oh, look at the way they've manned the mark. They let them do that. Or I'm still looking for a bit more from the guy with the ball. I still think there's things he can do too. Someone should be can just charge at the guy on the mark. He can't move. If you've got pace up and then you just either spin or blind turn or whatever, how's the guy meant to stop? Because if he moves before the umpire blows play on, well, it's a 50-metre penalty.
Well, exactly right. And there's other moments where the umpire calls play on straight away and the man on the mark's like, oh, I can go now. So yeah. I think everyone's getting used to that.
So the onus is on the players a bit more at the moment as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so. But you'll find everything keeps evolving in footy, particularly in the first 6 weeks. And teams will try many different things. Maybe the Swans, they'll play in front defensively in that 30-metre ring now to stop uncontested marks instead of playing behind. These little adjustments will slowly come in as the year goes on.
Well, we saw that from Essendon last night, didn't we? I mean, Francis playing on Franklin but played in front and did quite well, but there was a few occasions where Sydney managed to get through that sort of semi-press that Essendon had set up and then Buddy had got out the back. But for the majority of the night, him playing in front allowed the Essendon defenders to play up the ground a little bit more and actually stifled Sydney's ability to move the ball.
Yeah, and all you're looking to take away is the opposition's 80%. You can't take away 100% of what they do. So if you say, well, we'll take the uncontested marks off them by playing in front, and we'll give up the 20%, which is the goal over the back. We might get three or four of those against us. Hey, but it's better than having the 10 goals we're going to get kicked against us if we allow Sydney to control the ball. So that's something that tends to go on in the match committee room.
We'll get back into tonight's game and give you a full preview in the first 20 minutes or so tonight. But while we're on last night, let's talk about the issues from it, and particularly from a team point of view. The Sydney Swans, who would have thought they'd be on top of the ladder after 4 weeks and unbeaten? They lose Isaac Heaney, but, I mean, do we now expect them to at least make the eight?
Oh, look, I think so on that performance. I mean, it's just the fact not only are they ticking over the wins now, which is obviously the biggest market of making the eight, but they're doing it. They're playing football in a way the finals teams do and consistently play well. So, and when you're playing average like last night and you still win, that's also a good sign.
And I think they're coming up against different things every week now. So what they came up against Essendon last night is they weren't able to play the way that they wanted to play. It was a little bit dewy, so they tried to pick off those kicks into the corridor in the first quarter. Essendon were guarding that and got opportunities on the counter-attack from that part of their play. But Essendon's pressure last night was extreme. It was huge. So for Sydney to withstand that,
be 25 points down.
Be 25 points down and have players not playing their best football but work out a way to get themselves back into the game in that third quarter, that was a different win that they've had in the first 3 weeks. So they had to play a different way. So they're evolving. They've become quite, although they're a young list, they've become quite mature and they pick up on the game trend quite quickly. You could see there was a distinct difference in the way that they played from the first quarter to the second quarter. Quite often they would mark the ball from an intercept in the first quarter, look straight towards the corridor. Now maybe it was a little bit dewy, but maybe they thought, well, this is a different way that we're going to play tonight. The second quarter they would mark the ball, turn straight to the boundary. So that was a change
in play.
So that
was an instruction at quarter time.
I think that's hard to teach. And clearly quarter time gave Longmire a chance to talk to his players. But it's hard to teach players to have that game awareness, that game feel, and be able to change mid-quarter.
It is interesting when you look at their list. Like, everyone's talking about how young they are. And clearly they are young at the bottom end. Yeah, young McDonald, he looks like a first or second year player. The other youngsters look like they're about third or fourth year players, don't they? But there's also a good 10 or 12 of 100, 200 game players as well.
And they're all fantastic leaders too, yeah, aren't they? So they're not just good experienced players, but they're great leaders, which obviously if you're going to have any type of experienced player, you want the ones that can also lead and help and develop the young kids. But yeah, you're right. What I loved about the game is, people won't like it, but it was a very much a front half game last night. We saw a lot of front half games last year. We haven't seen that many this year. So,
was it because it was a bit dewy or because of the adjustments we've seen teams make?
I think it was the defensive adjustment a little bit, and it was a bit harder to score. So, I mean, one thing you can give Essendon credit for is they gave up three shots from D50 last night to the Swans. They've been averaging eight a game from D50 all the way through. So, you know, their defensive effort to slow them down and force front half turnover scores themselves. So the game changed a little bit to what it looked like last year, last night. So this is where it's intriguing. We put a rule in place. We think, oh, it's going to be like this forever. But the coaches will soon work it out. Is this now what's going to happen going forward, or will we see another change again?
So the SCG interests me too when it comes to this new rule. I mean, you would expect, because it's so wide with the addition of the rule, surely you should be able to, and it's short, surely you should be able to transition, but maybe because it is short, you could defend it better. I don't know.
Well, it depends how you defend. You know, if you do enable Sydney to take those short marks and then overlap and go, it can become a fast venue, but if you defend it a different way, it can become a slow game as well. As mentioned, a bit of water last night, a bit of moisture, and that also makes it harder for ball movement as well.
So is there, if you're the Sydney, I mean, Heaney's a significant loss for a period of time. Do you, how big a blow is that?
Oh, clearly. I mean, he was playing really good football. And you speak about the experienced players from sort of that 50 to 100 games. He looked beyond those years in terms of the way that you see him play. So he just adds a different element up forward. You've got the small little whippersnippers that go around, and then you've got Franklin and McDonald as the key position player. He's probably the most difficult matchup, I would think, because he can play tall or small, and he probably gets the third best defender, you know, with those two key position players being down there. So he's the most dangerous. Broken hands are funny. I don't know whether you've had one. I've had one, and it all depends. I know where it is, but you can return in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
If the wound heals and everything goes really, really well. And that's why it's so important to bank wins early. Because you don't know what's going to happen or unfold throughout the season.
And on a height point of view, Reid playing, you know, is a bonus for them because they always look better when they've got him there. And Hickey, again, I mean, last night it was a mismatch, clearly, against Wright. But what a pickup he's been for them.
Yeah, it's been terrific, hasn't he? His first month of footy has been quite exceptional. It's quite intriguing just choosing, and I know he was rucking its cocks at the end, just grabbing it out of the ruck all the time. And
yeah,
well, that rule in itself is an interesting one.
Yeah. Given you've brought it up, let's talk about that because, like,
I haven't ruined the run sheet, have I? Chopped ahead.
That's right. Geelong in their forward half with Tom Hawkins, at various times Brody Grundy, once that rule's changed, have been able to really utilise that. But I understand that, you know, they changed. That used to be considered your prior opportunity, and then in the last 3 years, it's not considered your prior opportunity. But surely that was holding. The last one was holding the ball for a start. That was a mistake, wasn't it? I mean, he grabbed it, and he clearly had enough time to dispose of the ball, and then he was tackled. It's like the umpires just don't want to pay it.
Yeah, I don't like the rule. I mean, I don't mind if you grab it and look to handball it straight away.
Yeah.
Like, and your arm gets chopped as you're in the handballing motion. But you grab it and stare around. Nah, don't like that one. Don't like that one. And then you get done. Well, surely that's prior opportunity. So that, just that grey area between, yeah, you can grab it out, but that time between when you get rid of it and grab it out of the ruck probably needs to shorten a little bit.
Yeah, that one wouldn't have survived the pub test.
No.
Would it looked clearly that he had an opportunity to get rid of the ball even after he grabbed it out of the ruck and then decided to take two or three more steps, then was tackled. I think anyone would like to see that holding the ball. You've done your prior opportunity as soon as you take those steps.
How do you defend that then if you've got a dominant ruckman and particularly one in some of those around the grounds contests where they can just grab it?
Why did it get changed? Do you remember what the conversation was about? Because it used to be holding the ball.
We need to check the history here. Did it come in when the no third up came in, or was it the same year as that, or was it another year between it?
I think the reverse was happening. You had moments where, like, a Sean Grigg would not even go up. You know, you play a really extra small ruckman in there, and you think, well, if he grabs it, I can just tackle him.
So
and it's holding the ball. So you can play anyone in that position. And
so
maybe
like
they
most
thought,
rules have come in because someone won the premiership and we didn't
and changed it. But, and that's fine. I don't mind the AFL adapting and changing rules to evolve with the game, but this one just probably needs another look at just to find that balance.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a ruckman, so how do you stop it, Leber?
Well,
you've got to stick the tackle.
Yeah, you got to stick the tackle, really. And that's particularly if they're that lenient on it and not get pushed out of the way. I guess what it does do is it makes you want to play a ruckman that's a little bit more solid in his core and strong, that doesn't, you know, he can't rip the ball out of the air. So that's probably the first thing you want to do. But secondly, other than that, yes, Louis said you've got to stick the tackle and make sure he can't get his hands clear.
Ben Rutten said he didn't see it last night, so I'm sure he didn't. It was only like...
Well, that's the usual answer, isn't
last
it?
Last minute of the game.
Well, he may have been... I don't know where he finished.
What's he looking at?
Well, I don't know. He might have been looking behind the ball, what structure they had. I don't know, Hutto, but we give him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't see it.
So let's talk about Essendon then, because clearly last week they surprised everybody by not just beating St Kilda, but the manner they beat St Kilda after they'd been pretty comprehensively... smacked by Port Adelaide themselves and had copped three significant injuries. Well, they're able to bring that pressure, which you alluded to earlier, against the Swans last night. And I think more excitingly, they've really unveiled some young players that you can see what their future is going to look like. And in the forward half of the ground, which Essendon supporters haven't been able to say for a long time.
I was confused by Nick Cox. I knew he was a right footer, but then once he strided into the forward 50 and kicked it on his left foot, I thought maybe I've got that wrong. I mean, he looks like a freakish talent.
Does.
To be able to play wing in the middle of the ground, run, have the aerobic capacity that he has. It's extraordinary.
It is. And he might be that player where you never know where you want to put him because he's got so many. And there's always those guys that come in, they can play so many
Mark
spots.
Mark Blitzarves type.
Yeah, Mark Blitzarves. You never know where to put him, but he's so skinny at the moment. His head looks massive. Yeah. Like, you know you're that skinny when you've got... Me and Barmy can talk about this because we've got the massive heads. But yeah, he's in our class, that's for sure. So he's got to bulk up a bit, obviously.
Yeah, and then you speak of how St Kilda... I mean, they would have had their reasons to get rid of Nick Hine, but...
Oh, gosh, it just looks like he's played in the wrong position, doesn't it?
Wouldn't they love to have him now with Patton going down in the preseason and they're two small forwards? Not that he would have played forward, but he looks great off halfback.
Fantastic. And they had a lot of halfbacks, and that's probably one of them. I mean, they obviously went and recruited him from Essendon reserves where he'd been playing halfback and then took him there and tried to turn him into a defensive forward, and it just didn't work. That run, I mean, the run he's provided for the whole season, but that one in particular last night where he bounces it four times, lost it, got it back.
The stringer goal.
Yeah. Some of his kicking into the 50 is outstanding.
Yeah, particularly when you lose Saad.
And you don't
give up much for his replacement in dollars or draft picks. So it's great. Whenever you can do that, that's a win-win for the Essendon Footy Club.
But would you say they gain more in culture? When you lose players and A-grade players, highly talented players, you lose them, but then you get in players who aren't probably from the outside looking in known to be as talented, but they buy into what the coach wants them to do. And you could just see that, you know, Danaher leaving and maybe Saad a little bit, but the buy-in from the Essendon players last night, last week, might not have happened if those players were still there. Because the conversation around those two players not playing, leaving, stuff going on might actually affect the way that the group is working together.
Yeah, there's no doubt any sort of negative voices around the outside is not good for a footy club, even if it's a player leaving or a coach might get sacked or whatever it is. It's not good. You can't run a smooth ship, but that's sort of not there for Essendon this year. And one thing they do have, they've got two of the best transition coaches I've seen in Blake Carosella and Ben Rutten at that team. So what we're starting to see a little bit of the fruits of that.
So can you expand on that? Why are they so good at that area?
Well, if you touch on Blake, it's just his ability to break down the offensive part of the game, give the players also their options that they need, but also educate them on the best possible options. So that's the best thing you can do as a coach. Say, look, it's always your decision, but this is how the game looks. And this is how it will look, and this is what you should be looking out for, but then it's your decision. He does that very well, and he also knows how to break it down and teach it in training day, which is the most important. Again, there's no point knowing something but not knowing how to teach it on a game day, and Ben's the same. He's sort of been running the defence at Richmond before I took it over, and now Adam Kingsley's doing as well, but he's elite again in understanding that part of the game and knowing where the X's and O's should be in that part of the game. So, yeah. They are very well equipped in that part of the game, in the game planning part of their match committee, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Getting back to the point about Hine coming in to replace Saad, we haven't seen Reid yet, but we've seen Jones, who was injured last year, and we've clearly seen what Cox
Perkins
has got to offer, and Perkins, who is a clear talent. He looks like a first-year player. This is going to flash in and out, but he's a good size. Yeah, so it might take him another 12 months or whatever, but and then Reid's a tall that can play down back. I mean, there was some criticism that of those three picks they didn't take a midfielder, but having said that, they can set up their spine for the future, can't they?
All premiership sides, I think if you look back, you need to have key position players. You look at the Brisbane's of the early 2000s, Richmond now, Hawthorn of 2013, every one of those sides has a spine, an A-grade spine. So I like the way the direction they've taken. And probably Jones and Cox should move in together and eat what each other eats, and because they're both very skinny lads. But
maybe they get, one of them could eat each other.
Well, they shouldn't follow your diet. I can tell you that much. But you can see the direction in the future. And I think I truly believe that is in key position players that can fill your spine.
Yeah, and also Waterman was pretty good as well. Yeah. He's a good little role player.
He's a thick man, isn't he?
I thought David Calthorpe was back out there running around again for a second. But, he looks like he's strong, a good role player. And so they're sort of building a different – like, it's good when, as a supporter, you can come and see your team. You go, yeah, are we different? Yeah, we are. We're different. We've got three or four new players. We're playing a little – and you can see a little bit of a game style change. And then you can give that a little bit of a tick and say you can get excited about something, even if you play finals or don't.
And a different Jake Stringer. We speak of those two boys putting on weight. I mean, he nearly sort of brushed it off the other night when he goes, I've lost a little bit of weight, 7 kilos. Seven kilos. Yeah. It's extraordinary.
There was one effort where he had four or five efforts and leading into his set shot and goal. And I don't mean to say I'm sorry, I'm surprised, but I was looking at the screen thinking, did he just do that? And that might sound bad, but it's a good thing for Jake that he can get himself to that condition.
Yeah, it's both good and damning at the same time, isn't it, in terms of the weight lost as to why he
sometimes a penny just drops later for people.
And it does. Let's talk about tonight's game, of course, but should mention your new i30 awaits. With thanks to Hyundai, the remarkable i30 comes with forward collision avoidance assist, which some of the players could have used last night, which uses radar to detect objects, plus a 5-year unlimited kilometre warranty. Test drive the Hyundai i30 at your local dealer today. Our experts tonight, Jordan Lewis and Justin Lepich, are here for Car Sales. Unique insights and exclusive perks with Car Sales for owners. So without getting into the X's and the O's of tonight's game, but more broadly, the Richmond approach there, unveiling a couple of youngsters, Will Martin, so he's not, don't call me Dusty Martin, and Ryan Mantle, who was the last player on, a Tasmanian boy that had gone to South Australia to play, and he was put on the list.
Yeah, and look, that's what happens when you get injuries in a footy team. Josh Caddy's omission was an interesting one. He probably wasn't their worst player last week. But the other one too, I mean, they drafted a boy with their first pick, Riley Collier-Dawkins, a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, and he's sort of been overlooked again by another couple of young mids. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he is feeling around the club because of that. But yeah, any time, and look, everyone will remember the Richmond game against Port Adelaide last year, and they had a really decimated midfield, and Port took him to the sword that day. And look, when you're making your debut, Louis, that oval, if you talk about a baptism of fire playing on there on your first game.
You thought, what was the old one? Amy Stadium?
Amy Park? No, Amy Stadium. Yeah, you're right, Amy Stadium.
If you thought that was intimidating as an opposition player going footy over park. There and playing footy park, well, this is just as bad. It's an extraordinary atmosphere. And if you've never been, if you're listening and you've never been over there, it's a must-do. It is fantastic. So good luck to him, because the crowd are in it right from the opening bounce. So if you're Richmond, and it sounds very simple, but how do you take that out of the game? One, it's scoring early. Two, you've just got to be on defensively. And two, you've got to try and take a little bit of heat with the ball out of the game.
We'll dig into what happened last year with Justin a little bit later on. But for Port Adelaide, they had from the outside at least, the softest of pre-seasons. They played and smashed Adelaide twice. And then, of course, played North Melbourne round one, went back home and really comprehensively thrashed Essendon, got a bit of a wake-up call on the road last week. So to play another really top team, another contender, I reckon that's perfect for them this week.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, no matter what team Richmond puts on the park, they're a good outfit. So the one thing I'll be intrigued with Port, they've been such a good transition team as well. And then Sydney are able to hurt Richmond on the transition last week. And this is where I love this battle tonight. Richmond would have gone to school in their defence, and Port's number one strength, apart from Sydney, are the best. They're the second best at doing that from the back end as well. I'm just intrigued to see this arm wrestle and who wins this battle.
So Port last year were number one from forward half chains, scoring number one from forward half chains. This year they're number 17 in that part of the game, but they're scoring differently. So they're scoring more from their back half, not their front half. And is that the man on the mark? Is that the kick-in rule? We don't know just yet, but that would be an area where Richmond would have to focus on defensively because they are such a great transition side.
It is going to be interesting to see what Port Adelaide, how their structure is in the forward half, isn't it, as the year goes on. Laddams left out this week. They went pretty tall last week against West Coast with Marshall coming back into the team and Georgiades and Dixon still there. They've gone a fraction smaller this week, so we'll watch to see what happens there. All right, we will take a break. This is AFL Nation, our pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best and for hard yakka for a new breed of legends. It's Port Adelaide versus Richmond from the Adelaide Oval.
Listening to AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles. Choose Beaumont Tiles for 28% off floor tiles. Australia's best.
Port Adelaide and Richmond. Jordan Lewis, Justin Lepich, Anthony Hudson, joined by Dwayne Russell, who's with us tonight. Hello, Dwayne.
Hello, boys. What a pleasure it is to be with you.
Well, for those that have been tuning in already, we've been warming up for half an hour or so, and we were just sort of wondering, did you get lost in the Adelaide Hills or something?
I pulled over the side of the road at Avalon to talk to Kimbo on the Rooch.
Did you?
I thought I was going to be cruising in plenty of time. Had a chat to Kimbo on the Rooch on SENSA, and Hutchie did say that there's a certain amount of hours of Dwayne Russell that's too much. I was getting close to the Dwayne Russell overkill point.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll take that excuse on board and we'll see what sort of fine that we hand out to you during the week. Before we talk more about some of the issues of the week, let's head to the newsroom for a sports news update.
A sports news update for Bluebet. Bet Australian. Bet with Bluebet. The true blue Aussie bookie. Visit bluebet.com.au or download the app. Gamble responsibly.
Starting with tennis, where Ash Barty's winning run off the back of her Miami Open victory has continued, beating American Shelby Rogers in a tough three-setter in the round of 16 at the WTA's Volvo Car Open in South Carolina. In AFL, the Sydney Swans' Sam Reid has told SEN it was great to just grind out the win against Essendon last night. And in rugby league, Melbourne Storm General Manager of Football Frank Panisi has told SEN he thinks three concussions is too many before the league's new concussion sub can be activated. That's the latest in sport. Bet Australian, bet with Bluebet. The true blue Aussie bookie. Visit bluebet.com.au or download the apps. Gamble responsibly.
Yes, we can't wait for footy tonight from the Adelaide Oval. And shortly, Brett Montgomery is going to join us. Well, Dwayne, you are the Minister for Port Adelaide here when you're not the Minister for Geelong. So just before we get into some of the issues of the week, what's your expectations after they were so disappointing last week?
Well, what I did hear from Kimbo on the Rich is that Todd Marshall might do a fitness test in the warm-up. So the sub rule kind of allows you to do that with a bit more flexibility. What do you think of that?
Okay.
So the sub will be replaced as well.
Well, no, he'll be part of the lineup in essence if he passes the fitness test. Otherwise, he'll be out.
Okay.
And so you can replace a player in the 22, but not the sub.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You're saying the sub, there'd be a new sub then coming.
I think there'd be a new sub coming. So he'll either do a practice. Well, depends on when the official warm up starts.
Yeah.
But essentially, doing a warm up 2 hours before the warm up, and then they work it out from there.
Well, it happened with Carlton last week, didn't it? Because Setterfield was crook, Cottrell came into the team, and then McDonald, who'd played in the VFL the day before, full game.
Yeah, it was a sub.
Became the sub, and he could have had to play in four quarters if there'd been an injury in the opening couple of minutes.
He's had to make them small too, won it, in their front half, unless they decide to bring Laddams back in from the emergency list that they've got.
Yeah, so I think Ken Hinckley did indicate during that week that if Marshall didn't come up, then Laddams would be the one that comes back in. So we'll wait and see on that front. Thursday night footy, have the AFL missed the trick by abandoning it for a period of time and basically till the school holidays?
I like it. I mean, anytime you can put a game on, I think it's better than not having it on and watching maths and everything else you could be doing on a Thursday night.
You've got to give the remote control back over.
Yeah. But, no, I love it. I love any standalone game. And mate, it gives us another opportunity just to keep the games ticking over throughout the week. So I love it.
Yeah, I'm the same. And it stops us from fighting against each other. You look at Saturday night. You know, next
talking
week,
about Carlton, on the home front, or are you talking about
both? Yeah. Yeah, next Saturday night, two games at 7:25.
Yeah,
and that will happen as long as we get a Thursday night game back. So it just makes sense. It's well received. It feels like the weeks go shorter for all us footy lovers, which is fantastic. And we don't fight against each other on a Saturday night. For me, it just makes sense to have a Thursday night game.
So, Dwayne, it's an attendance was the reason, isn't it, the AFL gave?
But I think Louis's point about having games up against other games on a Saturday and Saturday night is a great reason to actually put a Thursday night on, outside of the reason that most footy fans love it, and it's now part of your weekly regime.
Mm.
So I think there's a couple of, I'm sure, attendances, but Thursday nights have been a big winner in Adelaide, so why not play a group of Thursday nights in hot climate in the middle of, you know, June or July when it gets really cold in Melbourne and you can't play them? And maybe Melburnians are less likely, or I think tradition is that Melburnians are less likely to go to Thursday nights, but it's a winner in Adelaide, so why not play a group of three or four in a row there?
Yeah, the recovery is going to be the big thing from the clubs and the coaches' point of view. I mean, at the moment, they want 6 days at least between recovery. Well, the minute you put a Thursday night game and we go to Thursday to Sunday, the fixturing the players' needs in that. Look, maybe the hub was a good thing because the players got used to the old 4 day and 5 day turnaround, and maybe they're like, okay, we can handle that if we don't train.
They were shortened matches, though, weren't they?
Good point. They were shortened matches. But yeah, at least it's a starting point to maybe introduce it.
I think from a player point of view, if I could think back, a Thursday night game was fantastic because you got a few days off.
Yeah.
So it actually felt like you got what you wouldn't normally get in a season. It is a weekend just to sit back and.
As compared to playing Monday, where you kind of dread the whole weekend.
Your whole weekend is compromised. So it actually gave you, from a player point of view, a chance to get away from the game mentally and refresh a little bit. You know, even though you might be coming up against a 6 day break, mentally you feel fresher not having to wait that weekend to play.
Yeah, so it will be something that we'll watch from here on in. But I'm a bit surprised. I thought the AFL would have used that as an excuse to use what happened last year just to bring it in. But they seem like they're, for whatever, a little bit of the player management and a little bit of the attendance.
Well, maybe Lepper's right in that the players do have a bit of a say these days. Because
they do.
30 years ago, 20 years ago, they didn't really have a say. The AFL did, or what they wanted to do, and essentially you worked your way around it. But I thought we got to a stage last year where players were starting to say the 5 day break was good because essentially didn't train between games at all. You played and then you recovered and you played again. So
that was probably more in the hub though, wasn't it? That was a good tonic for them. They're not having to train and so forth.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it was mainly the games and what it was. Coaches realised you can't do a full session. It was quite a challenge, but when everyone knows that, you know, if you've got a 4 or 5 day recovery and you know the other guy has, it's okay. Problem with a Thursday could be you could have a 4 or 5 and they may have a 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And then it's like, then it starts to get a little bit tricky because then it comes down to, well, what team are you playing off a 4 day break? Yeah. And if you're playing one team's a good team, playing a weaker team and so on and so forth, and then it gets a bit tricky. But they'll have, if they can tick all those boxes, I'd love to see it out there.
What about Damien Harbuck's suggestion about loaning players mid-season? Do you have a philosophical problem with that or do you like it?
I love it, but I don't know what the thoughts are of everyone in here.
And is it specific for a ruckman? I mean, can we be that specific, or you just have to have a rule that applies to everybody?
Oh, look, Damien's point was a valid one when he said any time you can get AFL opportunity into a player, that's fantastic. Look, it does get tricky, and with the loan system, it's not going to be where it's like, oh, would you like Dustin Martin for 3 weeks? I think we've got to trust the system a little bit more. It's more about the young kid, like the situation Damien brought up, a young ruckman, Suns have nothing. It actually gives his player some experience and it also helps the Suns out. So within reason, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I try and answer this question. I've been out for a year and a half now, but from a player point of view, and try and take myself back to when I first started, it would have confused the hell out of me. If I'm a part of one program and you're trying to gain all this information about how you play, you're trying to gain information on how your teammates play, and then you get to a point where all those decisions are just decisions that automatically come to you. Then you go to another environment who could be playing completely different football, coach completely different voices in the room, and then once you're released from that environment, then you go back to the one, and that environment that you've been at the start could have changed in that time. So I think from a player point of view, it would be confusing for a young kid to change environments, change coaching, change the way that the game is played within that environment.
All right, we might come back to this topic because Brett Montgomery is ready for us in the Port Adelaide rooms, the key assistant coach of the Port Adelaide Footy Club as they prepare for their big game tonight against the Tigers. Brett, thanks for your time.
No problem, Hutto.
Well, it's a big game. And do you sort of feel like, in a way, given what happened last week, that it's pretty good to come up against a really quality side that doesn't get any more quality than Richmond straight away?
Oh, absolutely. It's an incredible setting. I don't think we could have asked for a better test to come off the Perth trip, get the reigning Premier on the rebound on a Friday night fixture. So I think it's exactly what our group needs. We probably, whilst we were playing pretty good footy and we had a decent build-up, we really didn't know where we were at before we got over to Perth. And I think we got a bit of a wake-up call on a number of fronts. Not to say that we're not the team we think we are, but we certainly checked in on a couple of things. So this will be a great night for us.
Broadly speaking, what did you learn out of last week?
Well, in terms of how we defend the ground, certainly got a bit of a shake-up. Coming off the last year and a half, where we've probably been the most balanced or one of the best defences in the competition, we got made to look pretty silly at times with not just the new stand rule and the inability to defend, but we just gave them far too much space. And that's the team you can't give space to. If anyone's going to exploit a team that gives up marks, West Coast at their best will do that to you every day.
Monty, Justin Lippage here. How you going, mate?
G'day, Les.
Just a quick question. Just on the prelim last week, when you do your opposition analysis, how much do you put into the last 3 weeks of Richmond and particularly the Sydney game or the game last year we got so close in the prelim? And what learnings did you get out of those?
Well, mate, you can probably tell me. Now you're on the other side of the fence, you can probably tell me whether we're on the right track. But I coach the defenders and the team defence, and to be honest, I really only looked at the prelim and even the round 11 fixture when we came up against you guys. Didn't take too much out of the Sydney effort of last week. Whilst I know that, again, Richmond probably struggled to prevent Sydney's ability to mark the ball on them. I think Richmond are almost afforded one of those every year. I think last year maybe Hawthorn, and again this year against Sydney. So now we've looked pretty hard at what happened in the prelim, regardless of weather, for how we need to set the ground up, maybe tightening up on a couple of matchups, the shape that we're able to put on the ground and make sure that the fast surge game is under some sort of control. So that's where we looked.
So has that been an instruction to your defence? Because coming into this season, no one really knew who would be under the most pressure. Now, what we're seeing is the defence are under immense pressure and they probably have to change the way that they defend. Is that the instruction that you give your defence? Probably play a little bit more assertive, or are you thinking more back shoulder? How are you teaching them?
Well, I think where we are, if we are breaking down, and I think we've still got a bit of a sample to play out to find out how much trouble it will cause, is more the indecision in the front half and when to get up and stand the mark, when to really press hard and come forward. Again, in contrast to maybe laying off and maybe winning the ball back instead of front half, which seemed to be everyone's go, especially ours, maybe winning it back a line a little later or maybe a possession or two later down the track. So there's a few things that we're still trying to get a handle on, and that's probably the major one right now.
Yeah, and watching the game last week, the Richmond game, we could see the City were just did not want to kick the ball down the line to Grimes and Asprey, and the players are so good in the intercept. Is that going to be a focus for Port tonight? You are very good. We've just spoke before how your game profile's changed a little bit to be a bit more of a back half transition team and been excellent in that space. You're going to take that part of the game on more, or we're going to see you be happy to kick more to a contest?
Well, I reckon that's the question for us going forward, is that balance of... And like you just said about Sydney, whether we've got the ability to find some more balance in our game, that we have got some gears that we could acknowledge. I think what we have done, we've brought in, whilst we're already a really fast team, we've brought in some more weapons that make us faster again. And sometimes whilst you've got those weapons, they don't actually help you. Going any quicker may not be the solution here. Making sure that your defence can catch up to your offence sometimes is quite a critical piece, and I don't think we've quite had that balance right.
You speak about weapons. There's a weapon for the Richmond Football Club. He wears the jumper number 4. Tagged quite well last week, you must admit, about Hewitt. Is that something that you'll go to tonight, or is it one of those things where you give the midfield the responsibility to cover off on him, and then once he then drifts forward, then hand him over to a defence, or will you go with a tighter run with?
I think we've got, we've set a couple of things in place. Obviously, as you all know well, he's probably the best player at floating between lines discreetly. And and in doing so, causing an enormous amount of damage. So we'll put more of a focus around him at stoppage, just to make sure he can't wander and linger around and start any chains. We'll make sure his play away is certainly not a free-flowing run like we gave him in the prelim. And up forward, if he's deep enough, we've got a couple of guys set there. I mean, Tom Jonas has done the job as a deep forward. I think where we've gone wrong in the past is when he approaches any sort of contest or stoppage as a high forward. So we'll put some time into that one.
So do you have a pre-warm-up test for Todd Marshall at all?
So Toddy will come out on the grass. He's doing some work at the moment. He'll come out on the grass. I know it sounds last minute, but it was a short week for us, and we couldn't really cram too much more training in, to be fair. So, yeah, he'll come out and do the old-fashioned fitness test on the grass pre-game.
So if he pulls out, then you can bring Laddams into the 22 and drop Todd out altogether and have either Boyd Woodcock or Miles Bergman as your sub?
Correct.
Okay.
Hey, Monty, what can you tell us about Lachie Jones, other than the fact that he looks about 25 or 26 already?
He's just standing next to me, so I've got to be careful, because he does, when he eyeballs me, I get a little bit intimidated. He's a grown man at 19. He's only had his birthday today, so look, everything he will do flat out. He'll run into some bodies. He'll certainly cause some chaos. He's got some growth, plenty of growth still left in his game around polish and system and all the things that, you know, all the buzzwords that people like to throw around, but he's got some good old-fashioned grunt and go about him. So we thought he deserved to show his wares in this big game.
Well, it's a huge game. It's an exciting stage, as you said, for a young man to make his debut. So we wish him all the best. And you too, Brett, thanks very much for joining us. Good luck.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Brett Montgomery joining us, Port Adelaide assistant coach. I think he knows the game as well as anyone, Monty, and he's been an excellent pickup for Port Adelaide.
Oh, absolutely, and there's a lot of great experience assistant coaches out there now. Scotty Burns, we'll speak to Adam Kingsley very shortly as well, who's a very experienced and a successful coach as well. There's a lot waiting in the wings at the moment.
Might ask you later as to perhaps who might be the next cab off the rank.
Well, it might be some old coaches think about getting back into coaching that were once coaches.
Well, you're in the media.
Yeah.
Just sort of, you know.
That's true. So Leper would have to take a pay cut to go back and coach. So that's not going to happen.
Yeah, obviously, that's a different manager to us then. Tino. We're going to take a break. This is, of course, AFL Nation. Don't forget your new i30 awaits. The remarkable i30 comes with forward collision avoidance assist, which uses radar to detect objects, plus a 5-year unlimited kilometre warranty. Test drive the Hyundai i30 at your local dealer today. Let's take a break. AFL Nation and our pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best, and Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends. It's Port Adelaide and Richmond coming your way tonight.
You're listening to AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles. Choose Beaumont Tiles for 28% off floor tiles, Australia's best.
Justin Lepich, Jordan Lewis, Dwayne Russell, Anthony Hudson with you. We're counting down to Port Adelaide versus Richmond. We will return to that discussion around assistant coaches and so forth and pick Lepich's brain a little. We've been chatting a little bit to him off air, so we might bring some of those topics over to our listeners. But we were just about finished on loan players before we spoke to Brett Montgomery from Port Adelaide in the lead up to tonight's big clash. Do we think it could come in, or do you think it's unlikely to?
I think the mid-season trade period could come in. Mm. So a month of mid-season trade opportunity. But are we ready for players to play for two clubs in 1 year or not?
I guess the mid-season trade period does do that. But what you're saying is then come back again.
Yeah.
Like potentially later on in the year. And
theoretically, you could play in a premiership, go and play in a premiership with another team against the team that have loaned you.
Or playing three teams.
And take all their IP as well.
Yeah, how would they feel? How would that happen? Has Dimmer thought this through?
And who gets the final say? Is it the club that's letting go of the player?
Into the grand final and say, no, you're coming back.
Because the perfect loan player in that respect is probably Josh Caddy. So if Josh Caddy can't get a game for the rest of the year for Richmond, then does North Melbourne say, gee, we'd play Josh Caddy every week? If Dimmer knows that Josh Caddy's never going to get a game again, what does he?
But does he have the right to bring him back at any stage, or once you loan them for the year, loan them for the year?
When it comes to coach, Josh Caddy would know so much about Richmond. In fact, he's been to three clubs. He'd know so much about football. he'd be taking a lot of knowledge to a team like North as well.
Well, there's an advantage then, isn't it,
yeah,
by getting a lone player. But then I think the confusion around, okay, who pays for him? Whose cap does it go under? There's a lot of underlying things to be sorted out before you can make a rash decision. I think, yeah, in essence, I'm for anything that can help improve the game and make the game better. So if this falls under that, I'd be all for
it. So back to part of the first, are rucks differently? Do we? It feels like there's a... Yeah, there's been a talk about a ruck academy and essentially acknowledging that rucks are an integral part of our game. Their position in the game has been under threat because of various rules and so forth. Still, there's like the last, Kane, I think, made the point, the last 10 premiership teams haven't really had a great dominant ruckman. Netanui missed the West Coast premiership. We still don't really know how important they are, but what we do know is that, teams aren't really willing to spend an early draft pick on them generally, are they? Because you can't really tell at 18. It seems like get one from another club, and Hickey's the latest example of that.
Well, Luke Jackson's probably the fastest, fast-tracking big guy ruckman that we've seen. I mean, Tim English took a few years to get to where he is now. He's been in the system. I'm trying to think of another player like Luke Jackson who's come through so quickly. Nick Cox could ruck, but his frame doesn't let him.
Yeah, Natanui. I mean, Brodie Grundy was about pick 16 or 17, something like that. 18.
So they do take time. So do you want to invest a pick three like Melbourne did in Luke Jackson to get a new ruckman, even though he's probably going to end up a key forward anyway? Yeah. Who knows?
I feel like there's more merit to the mid-season trade than more so than the loan system that was mentioned by Dimmer. I think that for me actually gives a side who might be decimated in the first half of the season through injury a chance to revive their season or actually improve
so North
the
could
back
get
end
Josh
of their
Caddy.
Season.
If Richmond know Josh Caddy doesn't get a game for the rest of the year, North could inquire, hey, would you like a third-round pick for Josh Caddy? Because we'd use him every week.
Yeah, and then the player, I would imagine the player would feel more comfortable going to a side knowing that he is there, that 100% of his concentration and his energy is with that club right now.
Okay, we'll take another short break. We'll be back, though, and discuss plenty more issues. We'll have a bit of front bench, back bench, because, well, actually, it's a bit lopsided tonight because Dwayne's played the game. As the caller, it's meant to be those that have played.
50 games doesn't count. Those. I'm with you.
You're the only jockey.
Thank you very much. It was a good horse.
We'll take a break. We'll come back here on AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best, and Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends.
Listening to AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles. Choose Beaumont Tiles for 28% off floor tiles, Australia's best. You're listening to AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles. Choose Beaumont Tiles for 28% off floor tiles, Australia's best. On AFL Nation, live from the Adelaide Oval, it's Port Adelaide.
In front of friends and family and the Subiaco Football Club Army. And he's kicked the goal. So you can tick that little box, Mitch Georgiardi.
Versus Richmond.
Pulling the trigger is Edwards on the turnover. He puts it straight through. So that's what they can do. They make you pay.
Welcome to the 2021 AFL Premiership season on AFL Nation.
Pulls it into the pocket. Cameron wants it. Cameron gets it.
To Silwood, standing start. Lash the ball toward the goal. Oh, that's a moment of inspiration from the skipper.
Charlie comes up brandishing. He doubles back from left to right and kicks one of the goals of the season.
AFL Nation on a Friday night, and what a Friday night it is ahead. Port Adelaide and Richmond as they revisit the territory from the preliminary final last year at the Adelaide Oval. Both sides coming off disappointing round threes. They'll be putting their best foot forward. There's three debutants in action. We're going to see Lockie Jones wear number 34 for Port Adelaide, and Will, not Dustin Martin, wearing number 36 for the Tigers. And it'll be very interesting to see Ryan, spelt R-H-Y-A-N, Mansell from Tasmania via South Australia debut in the number 31 for the Tigers. Jordan Lewis, Justin Lepich, so many premierships between them, and Dwayne Russell is with me. Good evening again to all you gentlemen. Dwayne,
seven premierships between the four of us.
Seven between us. Yep, absolutely.
Not bad, is it?
This is the time we normally play front bench and back bench, but Fahad Yakka for a new breed of legends, which is usually an even battle between Jared and I. Jared Waitley and I, the two that were unlucky with injury and so didn't get to play AFL footy, and the two that just had good genetics and fluked their way in Jared Healy and Jordan Lewis. It's a little unbalanced tonight, Dwayne. Do you want to be on the front bench or the back bench?
I can be with you. Because I'm a fossil anyway, so I played in a different era to these guys, so we'll take them on.
So 50 games you played.
Yep.
Yeah. Tell us, what was the standout moment of your 50 games?
I'm not sure there was one, to be honest.
Come on, be serious.
I was just being part of the system for 5 years sort of gave me lots of... I mean, I played in a different era, but also played for different reasons to a lot of people. I played for that 3 hours after the game, to be honest. That was the greatest moment of a person's life in those days when all you ever wanted to do was play footy. Footy, to me, seemed... And this is a horrible thing to say now, but when I was younger, footy was the most important thing in my life. It was more important than any job you could throw up or any education, or more important than family to me, because footy was more important to my family. I mean, to my dad and my grandfather, playing footy was what it was all about. So I grew up in a family that I could wag school if I was going to train. If I was going to the gym, I could take a day off school any time I wanted to in year 11. So, yeah, just to play, just to be part of a team and to enjoy that 3 hours after the game, that was always the highlight for me, to be able to enjoy a victory with your mates.
So do you see yourself now you're an extremely well-respected top football broadcaster, do you see yourself as an ex-player or do you see yourself on the front bench?
I don't know what it's like to win a flag. I played in the 84 grand final for Port Adelaide in the Sandful, but I don't know what it's like to win an AFL flag. And I find that I'm still really disappointed when the finals come around because I missed my chance. I think 91 was my chance. 89, obviously, I did my knee, so I played, the first 10 games that year and then didn't play in the grand final. So, yeah, I'm still dirty on not playing in a flag. I think that's what it's all about. I'm upset that there's a bit of a hole in my heart and there's a part of footy that I'll never understand what it's like.
Wow, very interesting response. From the front bench to the back bench then, are you missing coaching Leper?
Not really. in a big picture sense, I've been doing it 28 years in a row, and anyone that's been in the footy schedule, the modern footy schedule, as Geordie knows, is that it's 7 a.m. meeting, 9 o'clock training, 12 o'clock meeting, 2 o'clock opposition meeting, and then you go home, and you just do that cycle on repeat and repeat. So for me, just to get out of that rhythm is really good, and have a breath and live some normal life, to be perfectly honest. It's been fantastic, and I'm enjoying that part of it. I'm actually watching more football now, I think, than I ever had, probably because I'm doing SEN, but than I have. And I'm actually quite enjoying watching the game.
Without the pressure?
Yeah, I've taken my kids to games. My wife and I sat in the corporate box to the Geelong Hawks game last week with friends, and how good's this? I could have a beer and watch the game, so it was actually pretty good.
What did you think of Chris Scott's comments, which he tried to clarify? And he was referring to Brad and just the pressure that's on senior coaches about it not really being a great job.
I can understand what he means, particularly if you look at when I coached senior footy, I could pretty much say that as well. But look, what he means by that, I think, is that it's a really high-pressure job and it's impossible to please. You know, sometimes you feel like you can't please anybody in the job. Even when you're winning and as successful as he is, you can't keep every player happy. You can't keep the media happy. You can't keep your board happy. There's probably one or two board members in it gives you the irrits in your own clubs as well. So you almost feel like you're always fighting against something in that job. So it's not a smooth and easy role, even when you're at the top, let alone at the bottom. So I can understand why he's saying it. And he's been done that job for so long as well. So and it is a really high-pressure role.
Do you want it again?
Me? Yeah. It's not something that's on my radar.
What if someone rang you, though, and said you don't even have to really present, but you can have this senior job?
Well, I am got the senior job at Peninsula Boys Grammar at the moment. It is a big responsibility. It is a big responsibility. And I am the man. I've got to pump up my own footies. I've got to bring them there and do all that stuff. But, look, it's really not on my radar. It really isn't. But you never say never in life. And I think that's the most important thing is that would I go back and do a job like it was when I started Brisbane? Probably not. Once I've been through that, and you know that it's a 3-4 year of pain thing, because people say at times, yeah, we've got the 3 years and we've got the patience, but sometimes they really don't. And that's the difficulty in those sort of jobs. So that sort of thing, I'm probably not interested to go back in. But how many good jobs are there? Like Chris walked into Bomber Thompson's seat when it was in a pretty good nick, and he's had a pretty good run at a really successful club with really experienced, always had a Neil Barm around. He's always had experienced, good people around him. And then Brad had a club that was, you know, weren't as well invested in their footy department, and he did a pretty good job with what he had. So he had a more difficult job than Chris in a lot of sense that was put in front of him. So, yeah, and every club has a different, you know, can put a different case to you. So I don't know if I answered your question, but probably not.
Is there a clear next cab off the rank, do we think, amongst the assistant coaching cohorts or former cohorts?
Well, I think you can only comment on that if you've been in close proximity to that assistant coach. So for me, that a lot of the assistant coaches that I've been involved in are actually senior coaches. So a lot of my assistant coaches are gone. But I would speak up highly of Adam Uze. For me, he sees the game really well, got a really good temperament. And he's been involved in an organisation, and I don't know whether this is a prerequisite, but been involved in an organisation that's been successful.
So that's a really good... We were talking about that off air before, weren't we? The value, and as you've seen by another club, as someone who's been at a successful club. So how important is that?
Yeah, well Leopard could probably speak more to it than I can, but I think there's got to be an element of that. I mean, when the new coach walks in the door and the players look at him and go, where did he come from? Oh, Richmond. Okay. We've got someone that knows what they're talking about here compared to someone that might have come from another side. How much weight that holds, I don't know. I can't answer that question, but I think it would help if that coach did come from a successful organisation.
And look, as long as he gets support as well around him, that's really important. It's not just the senior coach. I mean, if you surround Adam Uze or anybody, Alistair Clarkson, around rookies, for instance, rookie footy managers, rookie list managers, they're really important because you still have to bring the talent in, identify the talent, and then the coaches have to do their thing. But so you have to have all that experience around you. And I think that's really important to identify as well, not just the guy, because you can get a good coach in and have not much around him, or you can have a junior coach in that has a lot of experience around him that can help him and guide him through.
Yeah, so I think you speak to coaches who take on that position, and it wherever their list is, it's still a 2 to 3 year process of getting who they need around them, the right people who might be contracted at other clubs to get them in and surround themselves with the right structure, right, not necessarily the playing list.
Where are we at in judging the most important attributes of a coach? Is it how important is the X's and O's versus managing other coaches versus relationships with the players? And any other elements you want to add into that?
I think
dealing with the public and boards and all those sort of things.
Well, I probably learned this the hard way, but in essence, with all managing anybody, I think you need to show them your heart before you can give them anything that's inside your head. So they need to see that you care, and even a board as well, or a player, doesn't matter, a staff member, it doesn't matter who it is. They want to see your heart. They want to see who you are and you care, and then they'll almost be open to learn off you. But if you come in thinking it's strategic only, you know, I only want to show you the X's and O's, and, you know, they won't get a feel for you and they won't get that buy-in. So the challenge for a coach is you want to fix the game plan. You want to fix what's on the vision. So you want to go straight to what's in your head. But the hardest part is at times just sitting down and taking the time with someone and showing the love and care. Before you then go on to that stuff.
Did you realise that before you started?
Yeah, no, I probably went a bit too much going in trying to fix some of the issues I could see on the tape, which is a mistake. And you can say that, I can say that honestly in hindsight. But I think also too, I had such a young and transient group as well. The list was changeover was so much every year that it was, you know, I almost felt like I spent more time trying to build relationships with the under-21s probably more than the older, and that was a mistake as well. So I thought, well, these guys probably aren't going to be here in 1-2 years. And I deliberately did that, but I think subconsciously you invest more time in who's going to be here in 3 to 5 than who's going to not be here in a year or two.
It's interesting for me to hear a guy like Leper and hear Jordan, because they're fresh out of the game. Jordan's fresh out as a player and Leper's fresh out as a coach at really successful places, three-time premiership player in his own right, but then at the Brisbane Lions, which is an iconic club and have resurrected themselves and become iconic again. it's interesting to hear that, because to hear how far being a great motivator has slipped down the list in some ways, because that would once upon a time have been number one on the list.
When you only see someone Tuesday night, Thursday night, and the weekend, motivation's easy because you had and you didn't have anything else like a game plan to go back to. But now coaching is, remember, you know, offensively, your job is to run wide, blah, blah, blah. Your job here is to press forward defensively. So it's instructional coaching, not motivational coaching. So when you didn't have that time in the old days to put all that together, when you weren't full-time, all you had sometimes is, I'm going to give them a rocket just to get energy.
And yet we see a team and they go, oh, they've bought, you can tell in 5 minutes, can't you? They've bought the pressure. They've bought in tonight and you can tell straight away. So what's that? Is that?
Well, I just think any team, you go back to the history of the game, have weeks where you're low on energy, and sometimes the coach can give you that spark, and other weeks you go, well, I've tried that spark, I tried that button, it didn't work.
All right, we'll take a short break. Plenty more to discuss, including not just tonight's game, but some of the other issues out of the games that are going to come up over the weekend. Adam Kingsley, and I know Leff has got a very hard question for him, so we look forward to that. He is the Richmond assistant coach. He'll be with us next on AFL Nation as our pre-match show continues for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best, and for Hard Yakka, for a new breed of legends, it's Port Adelaide and Richmond on a Friday night.
You're listening to AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles. Choose Beaumont Tiles for 28% off floor tiles, Australia's best.
AFL Nation, and we're here with our pre-match show for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best, and for Hard Yakka, for a new breed of legends. We're counting down well and truly now to Port Adelaide versus Richmond from the Adelaide Oval. All the action with Justin Lepich, Jordan Lewis, Dwayne Russell and Anthony Hudson with you. We're joined by Adam Kingsley from the Tiger Camp. How are you, Adam? We got you there, Adam? We got you now, Adam.
Yeah, I'm here, mate. Sorry, yeah.
All good, all good. What was the response internally from the coach and the coaching team to what happened last Saturday at the MCG?
We just addressed the issues at hand, and like we typically do, we reviewed strongly and then went to work on trying to fix it. And hopefully we've done the job tonight, but we think we've identified some solutions, and Port Adelaide is certainly going to challenge us, but we're pretty confident.
Broadly speaking, what did you identify?
Just some of our ball use. We were playing a little bit too straight. We didn't really give our forwards a chance, and certainly defensively, we didn't take away Sydney's short kicking game. And although Port Adelaide probably won't challenge us to the same level tonight with that, we obviously need to deal with it when it happens.
Hey, Adam, thanks for taking time out of your gym schedule to have a bit of a chat to us.
Thank you, Justin.
Mate, I've got a very interesting question from a little bit worried about your defensive 50 transition. Your opposition scoring very hard from their defensive 50 all the way through. One goal one last year is all that Richmond gave up per game. This year, 4 goals 4. Who is responsible for that, and will heads roll?
Wow. I think it's the rule changes, Justin. That's what I'm running with at the moment. It's certainly an area. Obviously, against Carlton, we weren't particularly good in that space. The last 2 weeks have been a little better. But, with the game, I think scoring from the back half has increased a little bit and become a little bit more challenging for every team, not only us. But it's one of the areas that we need to continue to address to try and tidy up.
So how much of the game has changed? Are you instructing your defenders, just on your defence, defenders to defend differently, or we haven't seen enough of the games yet, it's only 3 or 4 rounds in, to see a direct change? Will you instruct them to defend differently tonight?
Well, not necessarily differently. We just need to tidy up and execute our system a little better. I think how we've defended over the last however long, 5, 6 years, will still stand up, and you see teams really defending quite much the same method as what we do, and have had some success with that in the early parts of the season. So even though there's been some changes to the game in terms of standard mark and the interchange rotation caps, I don't think really it's going to have too much impact, certainly on the way we defend.
So going over there to Adelaide, hostile crowd, what's probably the one thing that Dimmer has implored to his players to get right at the start of the game?
Look, the contest is really important against Port Adelaide at Adelaide Oval. The skinnier ground, there tends to be more long down the lines, and you know, the contest is going to be really critical. It's a real strength for Port Adelaide as well, so they will certainly challenge us in that part of the game, and we need to make sure we bring our best in that part, particularly from the start.
So with the in tonight, Ross Mansell, Martin and Hooley, Riley Colley-Dawkins doesn't seem to get a look in again. Is there something in his game that he still needs to improve on, or is he still close to breaking into this side?
Oh, he's very close to breaking in. It really comes down to the midfield mix at the moment, and you know, probably Will Martin certainly covers the ground better than what Riley does at the moment, so that sort of works in his favour, particularly how the game seems to be playing out. Reduced interchanges is a bit more stress on our midfield, so you know, you're looking for more those running types, but there'll come a time when Riley's in the team. We're still really confident in Riley. His form has been pretty good. We still think he can play and he's going to play a really important role for us moving forward.
Just with the key backs, I know it's your area this year now, King, is Bolter, Asprey, Grimes. I mean, last week, Bolter spent a little bit more time in the ruck later in the game. Do you see now with Laddams possibly out of the team, he may come back in, we're hearing mixed reports, but will Bolter spend more time in the ruck now or the traditional role he's played, which is on Charlie Dixon?
Yeah, more traditional, mate. I think, you know, he's done a pretty good job of that in the past, so quite confident with Noah playing on Dixon. You know, Dixon draws the ball, but he's their number one target. Incidentally, I just saw Marshall running past in the warm-up here, so I think he probably plays. So Laddams won't. I think that was where the question mark was. And so, yeah, I think Noah's more back. A bit of pinch hit ruck as we've been using over the last year or so.
So Josh Caddy's your sub?
Yep. Yeah, he'll be the sub. We think he's our most versatile player in terms of being able to fill gaps in different positions. So he's an ideal sub for us.
Adam, thanks for your time tonight. Good luck and well done in defending the aggressive questioning from the former defensive coach of the Richmond Football Club.
Well, I'm a bit disappointed. I thought Lee Matthews might have joined you up there as well. You might have to ask him about his impersonation on that one.
Who is doing the gags at Richmond Footy Club now?
Yeah, we're a bit short on him.
Thanks, Adam. Adam Kingsley joining us. Tell us about Adam then.
Oh, he's terrific. If you talk about wants to be a senior coach, this guy studies, he goes overseas, he asks everything. He'll leave no stone unturned to get this job. So whoever gets him one day is going to be very lucky as a footy club, because he's a smart footy brain. I think going to Richmond's the best thing that ever happened to him. We talk about coaches that stay at the one club for too long. He spent a long time at St Kilda, and then he broke out. It took a year or two to sort of, you know, change and adapt, and now what he's learned is adaptability. So now he can go to another club. It might be a different culture, and don't want to throw a name out because it creates a headline, but you go to a different culture, a different club, and then he goes, oh, well, I've made these changes before. I've seen this happen. I've had these sort of players I've worked with. And so he's got the wealth of experience as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'd like to think his name will be bob up sometime the next year or two.
So just getting back to front bench, back bench, take us inside being the assistant coach, and you're speaking to the AFL Nation team tonight. How much preparation do you put into that interview, and how often do you get a question that you're actually surprised by?
As in surprising because it was quite intelligent?
Yeah.
Oh, never.
Never?
Most of it's a generic part of the game, but you don't expect that, because one thing I think, as I said, mentioned earlier, I'm watching more games broadly than I ever have. So I've got a great, more broader feel for the game. You know, I might have gone 8 weeks and never watched Freo.
Because you don't need to.
Know, or Melbourne or whoever it was. And so I wouldn't have a clue who's playing well. I couldn't pick an All-Australian team for you. But you know every specific part and every number of the team you're coming up against that particular month. So, yeah, specifically, you know, your team inside out and the opposition inside out. So when you ask game day questions, they're kind of like, whatever. But their broad knowledge, media tend to have better knowledge.
All right, we will take our final break and head back to the Adelaide Oval. The action is not far away from getting underway. It is Port Adelaide and Richmond on a Friday night. We've got the experts here with Jordan Lewis and Justin Lepich. Dwayne Russell and Anthony Hudson to call all the action. A pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles, Australia's best. And for Hard Yakka, we'll look ahead to tonight's game in detail and to the rest of the weekend when we return.